Oh, that was the whole of the women's movement back in the 70s. And having been in Armagh jail, locked up for 23 and a half hours, only form of communication was shouting out to each other. So when I came out, the... what's the word? The directive was for all of us in the entertainment industry is to push for 1 month for women. So back in Ireland then, I went to the Project Theatre and they gave us a day. And so we all met there and discussed it. And what we discovered was the way that the entertainment industry is divided. So if you have money, you can go to the theatre, you go to the cinema, if you've got money for the babysitter and whatever have you. If you don't, really, all that's left is for you to sit around and gossip and have a good time with each other. And we thought, yes, this is exactly what we need. It doesn't cost any money. And so why don't we set up a radio for this? So it took time to actually get the thing together. So we began the Women in Entertainment, and we would have things here, we'd be plays, we'd go on the river, do all sorts of things. So there was a kind of a beginning. And the other important thing was, because before that happened, my income was £16 a week in charring for the Arts Council building there. And Aishawna then gave me money. I was able to be a member of Aishawna, which was actually fantastic. So it meant is for the first time, I actually had £4,000 a year to actually do what I wanted to do. So really that meant then. And then also moving into Galway in this house, as you see, it's a kind of...
open space.
Open space. And it was kind of based on the idea in the old days when you would just pop into people's houses and have a little chat and you play a bit of music and whatever. But from the 80s on, people's houses became more full of furniture, carpets. And people don't go into anyone's houses now, do they? They go to the pub or they go to launches, but you don't go into somebody's house because it's all so beautiful, isn't it?
And would the women have been sitting around this table then?
They'd be sitting around the table, yeah, yes. So the idea, and I'll continue on here, to let each woman speak freely without being controlled by another woman. So you could interrupt a woman. To speak freely on all subjects in the spirit of Article 19 of the UN Charter of Human Rights, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom to impart information. This meant defiance of the Irish Censorship Regulations, Section 31 of the Broadcasting Act. The prohibition of information on abortion and the banning of certain books and magazines dealing with sexuality. To promote the concept that a woman has as much right in her own space to have her voice heard, the low-powered radio transmitter actually has to listen to the voice of someone else's on a radio receiver. So Women's Gael Radio began as part of Galway's Women's Entertainment, which was set up in 82 to celebrate and promote women's culture, and to make links and build solidarity networks with women in struggle everywhere against the patriarchal, military, industrial complex. We had four festivals each year when we would gather for a long weekend in my house. Hiring halls immediately involved money and censorship. So this is what I found in Galway. So you'd hire a hall. And I remember once having posters up of women in struggle, women in Armagh. Woman comes in, oh! It all became too difficult.
So you did it from here?
Yes. So, and as well as that, we were thrown out of pubs and all kinds of, to make our own spontaneous entertainment, open to all women, whether professional entertainers or not. Because all women are entertainers and storytellers, and custodians of the culture. We're all using music and video Now we added radio. It might appear from the above that Gore was a kind of 80s-style, well-structured women's group with a committee, officers and headed newspaper. In fact, it was more of a state of mind than a formal organisation. It was reminiscent of the fluid come all you get together of the 60s. when the sap rose and energy was stimulated by a chance meeting in the street, isn't about time we did something. A date would be fixed, maybe be no more than two of us, and from then on the next event in my house would gather pace. So long as there was a date and a time there was a focus, I would put up a few posters and any woman who turned up would be Galway women's entertainment. Now, it had always been one of the intentions of Galway's women entertainment, set up a women's radio. We had initiated a couple of open meetings in the town for women and women's group, inviting Sally Reynolds. What's happened to Sally Reynolds now?
Sally was involved in the NACB, the National Association. I know that.
Well, what's she doing now?
I think she's in Brussels.
Oh, the old... Sally Reynolds of the National Association of Community Broadcast, come and talk to us. The NACB was a pressure group founded in 83 to campaign for suitable legislation for community broadcast and to provide information, support and a range of services to groups and individuals interested in community radio. She thought that no practical steps should be taken until legislation was in place.
So you weren't affiliated with the NACB at all then, were you?
I don't know.
You weren't a member?
I didn't know there were a member. The fact we had invited her down, I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk about workshops and training sessions. On the other hand, Summers felt that you learn as you go along and that it was important to go on the air at once to gain some sort of experience and understanding of radio before the legislation came in. With my background in theatre, I looked at radio as I would have looked at a fringe theatre or film project. We should start small and experiment until we found the exact type of radio that suited our environment and intentions. Also, the NACB was prepared to accept the census regulations and abide them. This went against what we took to be two essential principles of the spirit of the women's movements: a woman's right to choose and the person as political. Nor was there any mention of a women-only radio in the National ACV's manifesto.
So that must, in a way, that answers my question, because they were pushing for things that were against your principles.
Yes. Well, I mean, I can understand this. They want community radio, which we do have now. And this one I'm talking about is the division between what we were doing and what your movement towards new liberal market was doing. I mean, it's actually quite interesting that it's all kind of panned out that way now, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
And that a lot of them suddenly realised that, because who was pushing all this? I mean, this was to a certain extent Europe, wasn't it? You know, that they wanted all the dissident voices to be kind of channeled and controlled by administrators. So anyway, how could we have a genuine within a state where constituents hardly recognised us at all? No divorce, only limited contraceptives, no abortion, no financial independence within marriage, unless working outside the home. At these meetings, the split between us and the more organised women's groups emerging in Galway became apparent. The strongest emerging groups were educational and training groups. They're just mad for training.
But you didn't, that wasn't a priority for you. You just wanted access. You just wanted...
Well, we didn't believe in all that. As we said, the same way as you do anything is you begin something, and out of that then is that you learn. You don't need somebody to come along and tell you what to do.
And if you had a group of women around here in an evening, how would you practically deal with the censorship issue? How would you practically deal with Section 31, deal with the ban on abortion information? How would it play out in a group?
We weren't a group. You had individual women all saying their things. I mean, like my neighbour Mary Shearer was totally against abortion.
But she'd come in.
She was one of our mainstream, which is the reason why we couldn't be raided. Because we had people like her and Deirdre Manifold.
You had Deirdre Manifold as well?
Oh, God, yes. No, we had a fantastic debate with Deirdre Manifold with another Catholic. Because what I discovered about Deirdre Manifold was, and at that time, is that John and I were working on this very long radio play about the institution of Christianity. We discovered about Deirdre Manifold was that she belongs to one of the heresies who were all shouting and screaming at each other long before Constantine had actually institutionalized the church. And their heresy is that the Pope is the Antichrist. So therefore you had the devil who had taken over Christianity. So it was really quite fascinating.
So she was here with around a table of an evening?
Absolutely. Yeah. At that time we were upset. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you see, the thing is that when you have a little radio like this, so you have all these voices coming in the same way. Have you heard of Pope Gregory? So we had the Pope Gregorians in as well. And we had a very interesting Italian-Irish woman who'd been here as a musician. She went off to Israel. And she then became part of an extreme Israeli sect who, of course, believed that Jerusalem is theirs. And so we must have had a phone call with her, actually, a very long discussion with her.
On the phone? Could you do that?
Yeah. Because we had a plug in the phone. And she had absolutely totally absorbed in this extreme Jewish sect. And she was going to be married to somebody who she didn't know. And what I found out was that the Israeli, it wouldn't be the Israeli government, but a certain section, were using these foreigners who had become overzealous as the front line for the neighborhood areas. So if they were killed, then of course is that the world would take notice. But she didn't seem to be aware of that. So at the same time we were talking to her, we had somebody from the Sudan who was a Muslim. And then we had a very strange young woman up from Castle Park. So she was, you might say, what do you call them? Not evangelical, but the ones who become ecstatic. Ecstatic. Do you remember that movement?
Yeah, they go into a trance.
What?
They go into a trance.
Yes! So she was there.
And would she be going on a trance here?
We were talking about all this kind of stuff that was happening. And she then had said her neighbours had tried to burn her out because of what they were doing. So it was quite fascinating, and one actually learned an awful lot about what was happening. Because if you kind of look at the underbase in a way is something which the state only takes notice of when the underbase comes up.
But so people who were very conservative in their views and really a million miles from your own perspective were willing to come in here and take part.
Well, not really. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm, you know. I mean, we had our manifesto that every woman is there to speak.
Okay.
That when we talk about conservatives and liberals. Within that, you have liberals who are very conservative and conservatives who are very liberal. Mm. And the main ingredient of it all is that each one wants to say what they believe in. And in that way is that you learn from each other. I mean, like, we would have women there. I mean, I had an abortion, and I talk about that, and Mary would... So Mary was interesting, actually, because what I discovered...
This was your neighbour.
My neighbour, Mary Sheehan, who was about 88 at the time. And this, I think, is one of the reasons why you have a kind of a right wing. They like to have rules and regulations. They like to know what is right and what is wrong. They don't like this feeling of total chaos, because where are they going to be? Mm. You know? And that's what they like. And so, but Mary was very radical in many ways. As most, I mean, like Deirdre Manifold. I mean, they're all radical in one way. There isn't such a thing, which is where I got into trouble, not into trouble, but why you're more orthodox liberal people who are just as rigid in their orthodoxy as the other ones. And they, in a way, are more rigid because they don't have that, mainly because of their place in society. So if you are a university lecturer, you really have to be very careful, don't you? As well as the competitiveness inside the university. So their lives are infinitely worse than all these ragamuffins like Deirdre Manifold, who is not bound by any social status whatsoever. So therefore, they did not like the radio. They didn't like who came. They didn't like conservatives. They didn't like women with children. They wanted it to be like their lecture room, which is they are there, and they lecture to the students, and the students are respectful because they know that the lecturer is responsible for grading them. And it's all lovely for them. I mean, I'm afraid that these liberals are actually the ones that are holding the country into extremely rigid, orthodox way. You might say they are the... I was going to say they're the enemy. Of course they're not the enemy. But they are not aware of what their function is because they have no time. Because I think in university you're also bloody hard working, aren't you? And you have to watch who's stabbing you in the back, and then you've got... Blah, 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 and then you've got EU, and then you've got your funds. They are overwhelmed with work and anxiety, as well as their own personal lives. I mean, they are the victims of our society. And I think during the COVID-19, I think many of them understood that, didn't they? Mm. Well, for the first time, they were really able to work at home, and they were able to look after their children and have a relationship with their partners, or not partners, as it is, but it's... As our friend Karl Marx so put it, I mean, they really hold the whole thing together. So, shall we continue on?
Yes. Can I ask you about your relationship with the authorities then? Because before we started recording, you mentioned all of the networks that you were part of, and maybe you could tell us about the importance of that network for you. Okay. Right. Sure, yeah. You want to get a cigarette, yeah?
Now, as you can see from all these books, I mean, the whole theory of community radio was very much part of the, you might say, the radical movement. I suppose which began in the 60s, really, because in America they were all off having their funny little pirate radios in shelters and goodness knows what else. And it was just that freedom of expression. And so that came in. So all these groups, have we got the little, yeah.
The diagram.
That's it, Making Links, Linking Waves. So Western Women's Link, that was a women's group here. Now these are, they get money from the state. So we were all the time, you might say, embedding the ones who were involved in the state and the free ones. We tied them all up. Does that sound too grandiose?
No.
Interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
which is really what you have to do. So we had that, and then we had Greenpeace, and then we had so then we had radical groups like Time Out for Women, and that was the whole Wages for Housework, Greenpeace, and of course Green in Common. So that was all part of Women in Media and Entertainment, and out of that then was Radio Part Woman. And we had AMARC, and then we had, which is a freedom kind of things. So in a short time, you might say we tied up the world.
And AMARC admitted you because of the censorship issue, you said that earlier. How important was it for AMARC to be... for you to be associated with them?
Oh, absolutely vital. I mean, without that protection, you know. And then out of that Dublin meeting, then a women's group was formed from AMARC, and that's where I met WINGS.
Can you just say what WINGS was?
Women's International Youth Gathering Service. So this was set up by a woman called Catherine Davenport, and an American of the women's movement. So she then began inviting women to make tapes. So it was all women's tapes on serious things. And there must have been women's radio stations in Australia. And what, so, you know, there you might say tied up the world too with these tapes. So tapes were sent all over the place, and you had voices from Africa, Australia, Aboriginal, everywhere. It was, you know, very, very exciting. And so therefore, and AMARC was a bit male orientated thing, so that the women's movement is, we didn't break away, but we got them to recognize that we have to have our own section, which we did have. And so that's all very exciting. So
you want to talk about the licence and why you didn't apply for it in 1989?
Well, we didn't apply for it because our manifesto was that we're totally, absolutely against the censorship, which controlled everything. When you think about, there was a war on, couldn't talk about the war. Right?
Go ahead.
You wanted to give birth. That was total control. About when you gave birth, when you didn't have birth, if you didn't want to have a birth. So therefore, you know, the war, birth, sexuality, all these were, so every single part of us was controlled. The same thing on the biggest thing was the fact is of women's own wage work. So that women were doing 2/3 of the world's work, and it wasn't even recognized. So you might say, down at the bottom, what were we? We were actually nothing. At the same time with the neoliberal market, I don't know, well, you won't remember this, but to remember the mobile phones. So Amelia actually has a very interesting theory on this. So any new technology, it actually goes at the bottom first. So they go around that the same way as the VCR. So they go around the housing estates, they would give women the VCRs for practically nothing. And the same way with the mobile phones. So that once you get the bottom moving, then it moves up. The middle class is always the last person to use any new technology. And yet the women's unwage work, this was not recognised.
So the licensing for you was just part of this neoliberal model. You didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Well, remember, I didn't know it was the new. I didn't know it was the neoliberal market then. Absolutely not, because we actually saw the reality about what was happening. I mean, the same way as higher purchase. You won't remember when higher purchase.
I do.
That's it. So in a very short time, from free owning people, practically everyone was in debt. Interesting, isn't it? On such a thing as just buying a settee, you then become a set. So we were all bonded slaves. In a very short time, we were bonded, which we still are.
And didn't you change the name from Women's Scale Radio to Radio Pirate Women then, indeed, in 1989? Yes. Why did you change the name?
Well, because Women's Scale Radio, at that time, it wasn't forbidden to have a radio. I mean, everyone was running the radios then, weren't they? So Radio Pirate Women, as we decided to change the name.
Because of the new law, basically.
Yes. Okay. So it was all great. All great fun. Anyway, anything else?
Before we started recording, you said that you had never been raided. That covers what we've discussed already about the networks and the protection.
Well, I think so, because the push at that time, and the reasons why I think the government attacked the pirate, because they're making money. And it was interfering with the neoliberal market, which was, once again, is that they want it all contained within the community. And
I'm just going to move this a bit closer to you.
So at that time, the competition between the pirate radios about trying to move in and get the license was quite savage, wasn't it? And in Galway is the consortium, what was it, Connacht Tribune and various things like that.
You famously called that consortium a triumvirate of church, education and sport, I think.
Absolutely true. So, as we know in this country, as we know from TDs and their fear of anyone rising up, so anyone then who is going to be doing something different is a threat to your existence. It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, instead of realising you're not a threat and can actually use it, but always it is stab them in the back and whatever have you. So they then, actually it's interesting because Bernadette Prendergast, it was herself and Joseph Gui who then took the stage about the censorship. Even though at this time, whether she was using us to try and get a debacle going about the abortion or, I don't know. So anyway, their lawyers told them to shut up. I said, look, it's a little radio station with people like Mary Sheehan and Deirdre Manifold. You would just look absolutely stupid and things. As well as that, we only were two... three kilometres, with gaps in the whole thing.
Where did you get the transmitter from?
Now the transmitter, I explained all this in here. So there we were wondering how we're going to set up a radio. So I was at an anti-apartheid meeting in London, and my son also was involved. So he had met somebody called Richard. And Richard had set up his pirate radio, and that was from this anarchist in Wales who produced a book called Radio is My Bomb.
Yes, I know it.
And all descriptions of how to actually build your little transmitter. So Richard then, you could have a look, Richard built the transmitter for us and came here, and we set the whole thing up with the help of the old pirates from Tina G, because remember, they had their... So I think if you're writing a book, I think you've got to separate the pirates who become part of the neoliberal market and the dissidents, because they had their radio back in...
1970.
Of the 60s, even. And there's been lots of the kind of little movements. Don't forget, 1960 was the first radio that ever took place. So it's quite exciting to actually not to lump everyone in together. Mm-hmm. So there is that kind of continuity of things. I think to do the H Block things is they had a radio in Dublin.
Yeah.
No?
And Sinn Féin had radios during the 1981 election.
There you are.
Several border constituencies, yeah.
Yes.
You had people from Sinn Féin here as well, of course, didn't you?
I did. Yes, our first little thing into Women's Scale Radio, we had the one who was put into jail for kidnapping Hedimer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Her name is in here. Now, on the business of... So what we decided with... her name is in here. I can't remember what her name was. She actually was an engineer. She was an engineer. So we invited her to talk, not about her time in jail and everything, but just as a woman who studied engineering was a woman, because this is what we thought, is that the whole demonization of members of Sinn Féin at that time, completely forgetting that actually they're ordinary human beings, you know. So that was interesting. What was the name? McGing or something in the senior. So anyway, so the world didn't fall down when we had her on the radio.
And when was your last broadcast? Can you remember when you switched off the transmitter for the last time? Or
well, not really.
Or are you ever tempted to put it back on again?
Well, it's not only that, but because of the whole business of the internet now and everything, so therefore you can make tapes, send them to Wings or anything like that. And as well as that, we have very close links with we've got Mother Warriors. So that you might say is that we are constantly, and there you've got Peace News.
Yeah. I don't think you'll find it after the local
now,
news.
There we are.
Oh,
so
yes,
you might say
yes.
Radio Power Woman is alive, well, with these young Black Lives people.
Yeah. Oh, there you are. Oh, yes, yeah. And congratulations, by the way. I saw the picture of you in the Tribune the previous week with your black balloon.
We can't get hold of that. So all these young people, black people, Black Lives, they had the demonstration in Galway, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
They're all young and vigorous. And so I'm trying to encourage them, because if they want to be heard, they really should begin making tapes and sending off to all these local radio stations.
And would they make tapes today, though, within the age of the internet? Would that be...
I don't know what it's called. Technology
it is.
To do it. Because they have everything. I mean, they have smartphones and whatever have you. Can they just get it together? Send it off to all these local radio stations.
Yeah. But you don't remember when Radio Pirate Woman was last on the air then, no? Or?
Well, not really, because we go on the air when we kind of feel like it, really. So I did notice on the web page it said something about 2010. So might have been there. No, there was no great...
I think it was about 10 years ago.
Okay, but there was no great... Because remember, we weren't like a lot of the Barrett radios, is they wanted their own brand.
Yeah, you didn't care.
You know, we didn't. I mean, I would say this Radio Pirate Woman, but we never had all this bit of wanting a brand. We were more interested in getting the information out, you know.
And you're not tempted to plug the transmitter back in again, are you? Or?
Well, I don't think it's necessary now, because, I mean, you've got the internet and you've got smartphones, you've got all kinds of... I mean, and not only that, but presumably the legislation is still there, which is you get 2 years in jail, £20,000 fine, 6 months for any... I mean, censorship is gone.
You know? So do you think, did Radio Pirate Woman achieve its aims?
Well, I've just said it had, because we don't have the abortion rules, contraception, sexuality. We can do what we like now. So I would definitely, I wouldn't say that Radio Pirate Woman on its own, but you're kind of part of a radical movement, which encourages everyone. I would definitely say yes. Very, very successful. And not only that, but on a local level, so there's a little story in this that when I was in, what's been Senegal, talking to a woman called Janet, and she was part of the, one of the women's radio, anyway, it's all in there. And she said, oh, did you get your traffic lights? I said, what? And she said, yes. Do you not remember, because we were in communication with all these radio stations in Africa, don't you remember, is that Billy Snake, who was an advocate for children and everything, had gone on and on about the Chantella. Do you remember Rahoon Flats?
Yes.
They wouldn't have traffic lights there. So she was gone about that, and Janet was absolutely horrified about it. So all this was going on, and somebody in the council must have heard, and we got the traffic lights. I mean, that's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. A woman in Senegal, you said.
In Senegal, or yes.
Would know about traffic lights in Rahoum long before the internet.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that they knew that the Galway Corporation wouldn't put traffic lights up to save the lives of children. She was absolutely horrified. I mean, that really was quite extraordinary. I was always... I mean, the other thing we did very successfully is that cereal packet, our cereal packet. And they put in little war weapons into it.
Oh, yes.
So we wrote off complaining, and they removed them. So all... I mean... What we're talking about is not the power of power woman, but we're talking about, once again, in this country, which is so sensitive to any criticism, and so you write off, you know, they don't realise you're just three or four people or whatever have you, but we can't do that. I mean, the same way as our biggest thing was keeping the women's hostel open. Did you read all that?
I haven't read this for a few years, so...
Okay, well, that was quite extraordinary. So that you might say one of the virtues of the radio pirate woman was you'd be sitting around the table and you'd be talking. So you didn't have formal meetings. And I think somebody came in and she just had a baby and she was staying in the hostel and she told us they all had to be out at 6 o'clock in the morning. And thought that absolutely dreadful. So we all had a chat about what we can do about it. And so we thought, well, what we can do is that we can put, if it's the time of the elections, we can put a gagging order on the politicians that they can't be in this, they can't be in the street the times that the hostel was closed, I think it was, anyway. So we thought, it's extraordinary when I think about it. And so we went up to the court and found out you can actually get your barrier order. So quite a few women were all part of it. A motion for injunction against Galway TDs to be heard on Friday, November, at the Circuit Court, 10:30 p.m. So her identical... Have we got all the names? Yes, they were all there. Plaintiffs in the case, Margaretta Darcy, Anna Finnegan, she was pregnant, Mary Doyle, two children, Sharon Salmon and Sarah, infant, Kathleen Lucknan had two infants... Sibylla Snake, two children, and unborn child. And defendants in the case were Mary Gagan Quinn, Michael D. Higgins, Park McCormick, Michael Kitt, Robert Malloy, Frank Fahey, Paul Connett, and Noel Tracing. So we took out injunctions against all of them.
And you saved the hostel?
We saved the hostel. Yes. So because this country is such a curious country, which... There's always goodness in everyone, isn't there? So we went to the clerk of the court, bringing all the children with us. And she then arranged for us to be able to be heard in the court. We then went to lawyers who said, no, they'll throw it out as frivolous. So in the end, he did tell us how to do the formal language. So we arrived in the court. And now, once again, it's funny, because the visiting judge was from Dublin, which meant is that the local judges all were only too delighted that he had egg on his nose. He tried to dismiss our case. When he left, I got up and said, silence for the women's court. The guardie, who didn't know what to do, stayed there. And we then had our women's court. So a lot of what we were doing had a kind of over-the-top comical side, which devised which divides the countries, isn't it? Because there's always some who enjoy it and others who don't enjoy it, and you're creating a lot of furore. So with all the publicity anyway, is the women's hostel, we say. But that was quite extraordinary. And also by bringing everyone together. Now, when you're dealing in an orthodox way, say if it was ordinary, but you would have one person. But instead, is that the whole lot of them came with the paddy pads and the milk bottles and goodness knows what. And the same way as when we were talking to the council about the thing, but they just weren't used to everyone coming.